Welcome to Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. This podcast brings you stories about Wyomingites in their own words. Today, we'll hear from two famous Wyomingites. One is author C.J. Box, and the other is Pete Simpson. We'll start with Simpson. He's a noted historian and educator, and was a Republican nominee for governor and former legislator. In this piece, he talks with his son, Millward Simpson. They begin their conversation talking about Pete's parents.
What's a vivid impression of your mom and dad? If you had to describe a still photograph that would really capture what your memory of your mom and dad were when you were a child, describe what that picture would look like.
My dad with a laugh, ready laugh, wonderful, gigantic personality. And mom, looking gorgeous, gardening in the dirt, in Victory Gardens, you know, during World War II. Dad is, you know, full of, you know, the young volcano.
Describe him as a volcano. Right. Yeah. My granddad and Nana loved to sing. Could you hum just a favorite song?
I'm actually going to do a kind of a favorite song thing for you because it comes instantly to memory. But, you know, we would sit in a car where you didn't have a heater, where they'd have hot bricks in the back and a wooden box that kept you warm and no radio. They would sing songs for 3, 4, 5 hours, never repeat a song, knew all the words, all of these, you know, making whoopee, all the Broadway tunes and what have you. They had gone to a musical show in Billings, Montana, where they came back singing one of the songs out of this play and went into Nate Natale's hotel, which had a series of mezzanines, and they went up to the top floor and were in a room, and unbeknownst was open, more open than they thought. And they were doing this little colloquy from the play, which was, "The night was made for love." And then the other one say, "No, no, no. The night was made for love. No, 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 no. The night was made for love." They did that. They did that about 4 times, and all of a sudden comes this big Italian voice says, "For Christ's sake, make up your mind."
I can see Granddad getting a big kick out of that. Yeah. Dad, you come from a generation and have lived a life that has allowed you to be party to some of the most intense and consequential and transforming events in our country's history. I'm going to ask you to describe briefly what it felt like to live in Cody, Wyoming, during the Heart Mountain internment camp period.
I was 13 years old, and when Powell, the place between Powell and Cody, 12 miles from each town, was chosen for one of those internment camps, there was more than a ripple of fear, particularly when it was learned that there would be over 10,000 people there. Camp was a whole series of barracks on the most desolate piece of land you ever saw, Sagebrush Flats, shadowed by Heart Mountain, which became a symbol of this tragedy, which it was. It had barbed wire fences, unclimbable, 12-foot fences, I think that was the height, and guard towers with soldiers with their guns pointed in to where American citizens were. My first, I'll call this a gift of anomalous thinking, to really confront anomaly in life, was sitting in that Ford V8 coming out of there with Dad and looking out the back of the window at a guy in the Fifth Army with a 442 patch, which, of course, was the most decorated battalion in the war, kissing goodbye to his girl underneath a guard tower with soldiers pointing their guns at, obviously, the place where his family lived. That was a new kind of political thinking. Independent thoughts. What is this? This is somehow
that is not right. Incredible.
That was Pete Simpson with some memories of the past. He was interviewed by his son, Millward. The piece was produced by Wyoming Public Media's Bob Beck with interviews recorded at StoryCorps. Next, we turn to Wyoming writer C.J. Box. He and his daughter, Molly Donnell, talk about one of their favorite pastimes, fly fishing. Box is a self-taught, avid fly fisherman, and from the time his daughters were very young, he was intent on teaching them about the sport, too. He remembers the first time he handed his daughters fishing rods.
The first memory I have wasn't actually fishing, but you and your twin sister, Becky, thought it was. And I think you were probably 3 or 4, and I got you some Mickey Mouse fishing poles. And we used to live in town in Cheyenne, and after a big heavy rain, I took you guys out on the front sidewalk and showed you how to put the line. I think they were little rubber balls on the end that put the rubber balls in the water, and then I would cheer as you caught imaginary fish, and both of you really got excited about that. And I thought it kind of laid out my secret plan for the rest of my life and yours, and that was to raise girls who fished. And so after that, you kind of got the hang of it, and then I got you a little bit bigger rods. And I remember taking both of you up into the mountains outside of Cheyenne when you were really young and tying on flies and bubbles, because you could really wing those things out there. And I remember the first time we did that, and both of you weren't too sure that it was going to be fun. There were some boys up there. Some other family came up, and the boys were teasing you. Couldn't believe girls could fish, and you guys started catching fish after fish and outfished them. And you were so excited about that, and so was I. And I think, you know, I remember one of those little boys at one point grabbed a snake because he thought if he couldn't outfish you, he would scare you to death. So he came running over with a snake. He didn't realize you guys like snakes, and you didn't do anything. You threw it back at him, and then they left in disgust. And I remember driving home, both of you being so excited that you not only outfished him, but you also outsnaked him. And I was very proud.
I can say from my perspective, growing up as a girl and having a dad that never at any point made me feel like I was lacking in anything or missing out on anything, has been wonderful for me to discover how wonderful fly fishing is. And it's one of my favorite things to do. And I've had the ability to work in fly shops and kind of be one of the boys and always get that respect immediately from men in a field that is almost entirely dominated by men, and to show that women are just as good, and I agree, sometimes even better at the kind of finesse that is required. So, you know, we had some great trips and misadventures. Do you remember the Red Canyon Ranch and the sugar fish debacle?
Yes, yes. Your sister and I and you went fishing on the Poposia River right outside the ranch that we were staying at. And I think it was the first time that Becky, your sister, ever caught a fish on a grasshopper fly. And it's pretty exciting when you catch them on a grasshopper fly because they're on the surface and you see the fish take it. And she was able to land it, and it was probably about a 14-inch, you know, native trout. And she was so excited that you both wanted to eat it rather than put it back, which is what we usually do. And I agreed, let's do that. First big fish on a grasshopper. And we went back to the ranch that night. And I said I would cook it for you. And I filleted it. And I got oil. And I thought that I put flour on it. I got a canister and dumped it in there. And then fried the fish up and gave it to you guys, and you both started saying how horrible it was. And I realized that I'd put the fish in powdered sugar instead of flour. And we started calling it, and Becky was so mad at me and at the rancher because he kept referring to her sugar fish. And I pretty much ruined the whole experience for you guys. But the fact is, we did get some nice photos of the fish before I dipped it in sugar and screwed it up.
We did. And fish was always one of my favorite foods, especially trout that we caught. So I remember going out and sitting in the car and just being so upset that that fish that I was so looking forward to eating
was
covered
really
in sugar.
Yeah, you were both really angry. Yeah, and then, Yeah, and you have always had a thing about fish, even as a tiny little kid. You still are like that, even with sushi, in that whenever you start eating it, it's like your eyes roll back in your head and you just start shoveling it in. And
that's not very dainty to say about your daughter.
But you've always liked fish.
I do. Yes. I know, too, as kids, that it was always really important for me to make you proud and be really tough on all the trips that we went on. On those trips, it was always very important to me to keep up and always keep fishing, because I always remember that was the goal. We, even if we fished for 8-10 hours in a row, fishing was what we were there to do, and that's what we were focused on. And one trip that always kind of stuck out with me is I remember I was trying to be kind of a girly girl, and I was wearing flip-flops, and you were telling me as we were driving out there that that wasn't a good idea and to put on some more sensible shoes, but I decided I was going to fish in flip-flops that day, and we parked the truck and got out and were prepared to hike miles and miles down the river, and the first stream I crossed, it took my flip-flop off, and we all just watched it float downriver, and I was very upset and didn't know what to do, and I think I threw out the idea of maybe going back and getting me another pair of shoes, and you said, well, I gave you the option to put on some different shoes, and you chose to wear flip-flops, and we're not going back to get them, so your options are to sit in the truck all day or to just keep fishing with us. And I remember I wanted to be tough, and fishing was the most important thing to me, and I spent all day fishing and hiking with one shoe. And
I was impressed, although one thing I do remember very distinctly about that is the three of us all looking downriver and watching your little yellow flip-flop float away. But no, you stuck with it, and that's not easy to do. And I guess that's one time when I realized, you know, your passion for fishing was more than just trying to make me happy, that you really do and did like it.
Because I even remember stepping in like moose and elk scats, yep, and just kept going.
Squishing it between your toes.
Yeah. But I caught some fish that, yes, day, so it was successful. I would also like ask how you were kind of affected, not just by those kinds of funny things, but some of the amazing things that we all were able to see and experience together being out in nature, like the fog lifting in Yellowstone National Park or wolves howling on Slough Creek. What was that like for you to experience those beautiful and amazing things kind of on the ground with Becky and I?
Well, I mean, they're really important memories. And I can remember a couple of times. You mentioned one of them, and that's that your sister and I went out very early in the morning, and it was not a good day. It was really heavily, it was fogged in, and we couldn't see very far at all while we were fishing. And I was worried with you guys, you know, that I'd lose you along the river because it was hard to see. But finally, about 10 o'clock, the fog started to lift, and we realized we were surrounded by buffalo, bison, everywhere, and they weren't very far away, and we were kind of cornered by them, and that was just the strangest thing to realize they'd been there all along. We didn't even know it, and that there they were. But I think another Yellowstone thing, I think one of my favorite memories with you and your sister was when we hiked and camped up to Slough Creek in Yellowstone Park and fished that one of the best fishing rivers in the world, where you sight cast for fish. We could see them. We were 8 miles up, and we backpacked in, so we couldn't take a lot of things. But one thing I did take was a Nalgene bottle full of wine. And we were all having, you know, after a long, hot day, all having a little bit of wine. And, you know, the stars are brilliant up there, and it was very clear, warm night, and I remember somebody said, what was that, and we all sat back and got quiet and could hear wolves howling. And I know that was very affecting to all of us to hear that and not have any idea how many there were, how close they were. And you know, that wasn't that long after they'd been reintroduced, so it wasn't a normal thing in Yellowstone Park, and it reminded us how remote we were.
I know that all those trips and that family experience has been a huge impact on me and my sister. And I just kind of wonder how you think those trips have kind of shaped our life and all of our lives and family.
Well, I think you'd agree that, like we were talking about earlier, that it's kind of really enhanced your appreciation for getting outdoors. And it's made you, I think, in some ways more realistic about a lot of things, because when you're out there and you're fishing or hiking or just climbing around in rocks and things, you don't have a Bambi-like view of nature. You've got a very realistic view of nature. You appreciate it, but you don't idealize it.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. That's one memory, too, I have from being a child that sticks out to me very visually, is one of the summers when we were fishing in Yellowstone, and it was early in the spring in May, and normally we didn't go till later in the year, and we're out on the Given River. And I came around a corner and I walked almost right into a buffalo that had winter killed, and it had died at some point, and all that was really left, it was mostly its fur and skeleton that was left. But as a kid, it was such an impact for me, at that same idea with nature, because buffalo are such, they're mythical creatures that you see in movies and TV shows, and they're an icon of the West. And I remember coming around a corner and it was like, here's this great huge beast that you see in this such a romantic light, and here's one kind of laying dead right in front of me. And it wasn't something that was just far away. It was right there and real. I even remember I took a little piece of like the hide, the winter hide that was laying next to it, and stuck it in my fishing vest.
Is it still there?
And I still have it in there.
You know what? This has been a lot of fun.
It has been a lot of fun.
And I think we need to go fishing.
I agree.
That was author C.J. Box talking with his daughter Molly Donnell. The piece was produced by Wyoming Public Media's Irina Zhoroff, with interviews recorded at StoryCorps.
Well, if I could, you know that I would never change a thing. Afternoon, go fishing. In the evening, I'd sing all about the river, how the water brought us through. Live a little while the way that real women do.
And that's it for this edition of Wyoming Stories. We'll release a new edition the first Monday of each month. Willow Belden produced the podcast, and Anna Rader is our web editor. You can find the stories you heard today and lots of others online at wyomingpublicmedia.org. And if you have a story you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. Information about recording your story is available at our website. Wyoming Stories is a production of Wyoming Public Media.